Okay, so we will we'll begin here with the what English calls the preface. These are just some general words that get you in the mood, kind of, for the book. I don't know, mood isn't really accurate, but here we go. Chishavti drachai v'ashivo ragli al egosecha. This is a pasuk in Tehillim. I thought over my ways and I returned my steps to your commandments. This is the author speaking, the author of the book itself. He writes, Moshol shnechem vanim. It could be compared to two shopkeepers. Echad oshir chacham u'mohir b'malachto. One was wealthy and wise and very quick with his work. V'chai b'zman u'mokom, and he lived in a time and a place. Sheschora ma'ale schor harbe. That the that his goods, the things that he was selling, fetched a lot of money. There are always people jumping to acquire the stuff. Who shakud yom v'layla, and he was busy day and night. L'achnes schora la'otzaro, he was bringing merchandise into his storehouse, ulafanoso lakonim, and he turned it out to the emptied it out for the buyers. Roa kiso mismalo din reizov meharevach shalo. He saw his pocket filling up with profit, with gold from his profit. Ubonats otsaros chadoshos, and he builds new storehouses. Machnes l'tochem schoros chadoshos, and he brings new things in there. Veino mefana libo cheshbonos klal, and he doesn't bother with keeping track too much. Like the money just keeps falling in, whatever he's doing. So, you know, today he has so much money in his pocket, the next day he has more, the next day he has more, you know. Keeps making money. Fasheni, the other person, second person, ani bedas uvumamon. He had poverty of mind and money. He wasn't that talented, and he didn't have money. V'chai bizman u'makom she'ein schor also charifa. He lived in a time when his business wasn't, his wares were not sought after. Lomala schar harbe, didn't fetch a lot of money. Husharui bedogo rusafik tomid, and he was always worried, and he was always uncertain. Im hachnososov machrian es hotzaosov. Does his income cover his expense? Umachmosh engel pernosa charis, since he doesn't have any other income. Harehu v'neveso. Musukanim lomos nufucherov. He and his family members are in danger of dying of famine. Ve'ein lo takona acheres. He has no other choice. Elo lios mefakeach al iske cheshbonosov. He has to examine the matters of his accounts. V'aduk b'pinkaso tomid. He has to always hold on to his notebook. V'harayesh lo p'nai l'kach, and he has time for that. You know, he's able to listen to watch his stuff. He has time because he's not doing any business. Shemitocho yilmad, that through it he will learn. Eze schora yoser chavrifo, which goods are more wanted? Uve'ezes man, mala olav schar yoser, and then at what time Will it fetch more money? Val yedekach, and through this, yuchal hamik v'lachkor beiske knias u'mechiras mine scharosov. That through this he will be able to get into the matters of his buying and selling his things. Lamsi tachbulos chadoshos, and to find new tricks, miyom liyom, day to day. Lahalos schara molo, bod yoser v'yoser, to increase his reward of his work more and more. Laharim, and to figure out ways, l'dakte kmokan, and to be very careful, similar to b'iske parnasoso, in the matters of his income, chotzosov, and his expenses, k'chut hasayro, like a hare. Like he'll watch every single thing. I'm sorry, we're on page 24 of the book, and most of you walked in while I was after we started. It's talking about, he says, this is his introduction. He said there are two people, two businessmen. One was a smart fellow. He had a business. He had a product that everybody wanted. He was making money right and left. He just brought in goods and sold it. And every day he kept making more money, and he just went on like that. He didn't really wasn't so careful about the accounts of his business, because he just kept making money. He said someone else was poor, wasn't so sharp mentally, he didn't have such a good product, he didn't live in a time when business was good. And he was in terrible straits. He didn't have parnasa, he wasn't making money. So he had to get into the habit of carrying his, account book around and watching everything, watching every little expense, measuring everything. He says kuchut asaira means like a hair, like the width of a hair, meaning he's got to do all kinds of work to make it go, because he doesn't have that much to work with. That's what we've done so far. We're up to the bottom of the page. I just paused this thing. I hope that... there it goes. All right. V'yasmid ba'ofen zeh, and you should continue this way. Meshech shono achas. And he will. He does this way for a year. Meshech shana achas l'chol apachos, at least for a year. For oz, and then yare cheshbon ha'otzah keneged ha'achno. So then he measures, he figures out the expense as opposed to the income. B'chdei lamod, to figure out al tochen cheshbon ha'odef. To figure out how much he's taking in, how much more he's taking in. And at least through this, he'll get away from danger, meaning the danger of starving, and the worry over it. And so it'll go from year to year. I guess each time he'll figure something out, he'll be more careful, and he'll expand little by little. Atshe yagia l'chaye parnosa v'oneg b'siyata d'shmaya, until he'll get to a life of a parnosa, of having an income, berevach, in abundance, v'oneg, and pleasure, b'siyata d'shmaya, with Hashem's help. V'animshol yisboyer b'chibur zeh baruka mirtzah Hashem. And the thing to which it can be compared to is what will be explained in this book. I guess he's going to say, you know, we people, we represent the second type of the businessman. We need to be so diligent about every little thing, and we have to do it for years, and then we'll come to this blissful state. And that's what the book is about. And that's his introduction.
Does he get into the first shopkeeper at all?
The first shopkeeper, no, he doesn't. Seems to feel that we're more like the second shopkeeper. The first guy doesn't need a book because he doesn't even keep track. He just throws things in and they come out with money. All right. So now we're coming to the psicha, which he calls introduction. I think I called the other one introduction. What is
preface?
Preface. It's like, it's more, I think in English, it would be more like a foreword rather than an introduction, because it really is the beginning. It's really the beginning of the book. It's laying out parts of the book here already, and it is going to be very interesting. This psicho ticha. Okay. So he writes. Okay, now this here, he's going to lay out some basic principles of understanding people and how, you know, how people are motivated and what makes them tick. It's all very interesting. So here's what he says: Kishato matayel al sfas hanohar, when you stroll along the edge of the river, atomotze bikoshlema, you find a whole valley, mole konevasuf, full of reeds. Konas are reeds, he says suf are rushes. I don't know what the difference between rushes and reeds. I guess it's a river, because rivers typically are in valleys. The rivers, that's where the water goes to. And it happens often that, I guess, in a moist area where there's a river, there are reeds. So you'll see such a thing. Shekulon omdos zekufos zuetzel zu. You'll see all the reeds standing up, one next to the other. Ein koach ba'achas mehen lehoziz atzmo. Not one of them has the strength to move itself. Afilu kemelo sara achas mimamoda. Not even one hair from its standing place. Meaning, if there's a reed is standing there, the reed can't decide to move itself. It can't even move. It can't move anything. A hair, you know, the width of a hair, it can't move. Avol b'toch shor muatas, but within a small moment, in a short time. Al yedei neshivas ruach kol shehu, through the blowing of any kind of wind, nira kol pene shetach elyon, we see the whole shetach elyon means like the top part of it, mizdazeya, like trembling, umismotet, and leaning over, eilech v'eilech, this way and that way, kegale hayom, like the waves of the sea. I don't think it means this way and that way. It probably means it. Sometimes it goes this way, sometimes it goes that way. But like the wind blows from this side to that side, that's the way the tops of the branches go. They don't flip flop back and forth. And also the waves of the ocean, to which it compares it, only go in one direction. But it probably means that they go like sort of in waves, and that they go, and then they get up a drop, they go down a drop, up and drop, up and drop, up a drop, down a drop. So that's what you see. She'ein koch ba'achas mohen, now there's no power in one of them, v'schaze kenegdo, to like stiffen itself against it, like against the wind, v'lamod al amoda, and to stand on its, you know, in its standing position, afilu rega, even for a moment. Kamemra, I'm not sure how he uses that word. But the point is, when the wind doesn't blow, then the things stand and they can't move. When the wind does blow, they all get pushed around by the wind, but then they can't resist the wind. It's an irresistible force. No branch, no matter how no matter what kind of branch it is, branches can't resist the wind. They just get pushed around, and that's it. Now the author continues. It starts to get, now the application gets a little interesting. Very interesting. He says, "Kein hu nefesh ha-bahamas." So too is the animal-like soul that's within man. She'ein bo ruach eitzo ugvura. It has neither ruach, that's a spirit. Eitzah means counsel. Ugvura doesn't have strength. Lonuach, to rest. Olonua, or to move. Me'atzmo, on its own. Mikoach bechirasa, out of its own free choice. Now the animalistic spirit in man can't make any choices. Now the animalistic spirit in man, this is what he calls the nefesh ha-bahamas, the animalistic soul. It's not soul the way we usually use the word as in neshama, but it means the life force within a person which is animalistic. For example, the part of us that has lusts. Right? We have a part of us that lusts after food, lusts after all kinds of pleasures. It lusts for rest. It lusts for whatever. So that part can't determine its own destiny. It can't stop. It can't start. Can't do anything. Elo mismaetes v'holeches. The word mismaetes, I couldn't figure out what it means. The translator says it means it's swayed, v'holeches, and it goes, taketh immediately. Al yedei hisorus, through the arousal of eza nidnud roach taiva utzar, hamut boim bo betchilas briyasa. That it gets moved through the arousal of lust or of pain that has been in it since the beginning of its creation. So, for example, let's say a person is lying on a couch resting, or he's reading a book. He's doing a completely mental type of thing. He's reading a book, he's studying, whatever he's doing, watching TV. And all of a sudden, the lust within him says, "I want to have something to eat." Why did that lust get aroused? I don't know. Could be that he, you know, had some physical hunger. It could be he saw an image of something tasty on the tube. It could be he turned around and saw somebody eating something, and that put an idea in his head that that's a good idea. Or something, whatever it is. But then the thing that's happening is that there's an arousal, and then the arousal says to the lust, not says, but the arousal activates the activity of the Nefesh HaBahamas, an animalistic spirit, just like the wind moves the branches. Okay? So, I'm just going to start again from the second line here, of the second paragraph on 28. He's saying, it doesn't have the right, it doesn't do anything on its own, the Nefesh HaBahamas, Elamis Ma'etes, but it's swayed, Ha'leches, or it goes, taketh immediately, Al Yedei His Orus, Eza Nidnud Ruach Taiva, Otsar, through the arousal of any movement of lust or pain, like lust is he wants the food, pain is, let's say, he has pain from not having food. So it's not that he wants food, he just wants to avoid the pain of being hungry. The hamut boimba that are implanted in him, implanted in it, betchilas briyasa, the beginning of its creation. Oshinasa lo teva mulumedes al yedei hergel aruch. Or it could become habit forming through extended habituation. So let's say extended habituation might be, let's say if you work at a job and every day you have lunch hour from Monday through Friday at 12:10. So when you look at your watch and it's 12:10, then all of a sudden you want to eat. Well, why do you want to eat? Why does your hunger, function or tell you you're hungry at 12:10 and not at 12:08? Well, because at 12:10 is lunchtime. So the habit of eating at 12:10, gets you to the point that you just look at your watch and then that causes a learned response of the non-thinking Nefesh HaBahamas. If it gets used to signaling hunger at 12:10, then it signals hunger at 12:10. Even if you're not hungry, or whatever, you might have had more to eat in the morning or less to eat one day, more to eat one day, but whatever it is, you're 12:10, it tells you you want to eat.
Even if you're not hungry, really.
To a certain extent, yeah. Now, then he says, this goes on, that it sends the message that it wants its fulfillment. Ad shehispia es taivo seha, until it satisfies its lust, upasku kol hargo shoseha, and then all of its feelings have ended. So, I guess, let's say the person got the hunger signal, and it generally takes so much food to cause the signal to stop. And then when that happens, then the hunger signal abates. That's what happens. For us, he nikpes betardumos atzlus. Then it's like frozen or congealed in the lazy type of sleep. Ve'eino yochola lozuz me'atzma od. And again, it can no longer do anything on its own. Can't move on its own. Achi yozvo eza ruach kolshuhu shargosha v'taiva, until any kind of spirit of feeling or lust will come, v'yekitzena, and it'll wake it up. And so on, meaning that the lust stays, like the example is like the reeds in the valley, so they stay there until something blows, so it moves it uncontrollably. Once the force that moves it goes away, it goes back to the way it was before, that it's standing without moving, And then it just stands without moving till the next event that causes it to respond comes along. Ukeshapogimbo eshte ruchos hafuchos, when two contradictory spirits clash, come together, let's say one tells it this and one tells it that. Azai hi nichnas la yoser chazaka shavohen ba'oso shah. So then it's nichta literally means it's humbled, but it means it's directed by the stronger force. It's like, I guess, if there's a north wind and a south wind that come at the same time, I don't know if such a thing is possible, but if it were, so the stronger wind would blow the reed in the direction of the stronger wind. So too with the animalistic spirit, if one thing tells it to do this and one thing tells it to do that, let's say, one thing tells it to go eat, one thing wants it to go sleep. So it doesn't choose to either eat or sleep. It just responds to the more powerful force. Now there's another thing that he hasn't spoken about yet, and that's the intellect. His intellect comes along, and then, that's a different player here. But he's talking at this point not about that. He's talking just about the Nefesh HaBahamas part of us, just that part. That Nefesh HaBahamas acts the way he's been describing thus far.
I had a psychology professor in university years ago whose big thing was that sleep was the strongest biological motivation.
Strongest biological motivation.
People will satisfy sleep before anything else.
Interesting. I mean, to me, it would seem how it depends to a certain extent on how tired you are.
Yeah.
If you're tired enough, then you really do. You miss a night of sleep, and then the next night you miss most of the night. Third night, you don't want to eat, you don't want to do anything, you just want to sleep. But it has to really get up there, the sleep deprivation. I don't know what exactly he was referring to, I'm not sure.
Rabbi, with the wind thing, there's something called the prevailing wind.
Yeah.
So when there's, I guess, more than one wind, it's called the prevailing wind, is the one that prevailing wind is the one that's more forceful.
Yeah.
So what happens when there are two separate instincts within, less within you?
Yeah, well, he says the stronger one carries the day.
Yeah.
That's what he says. That the stronger one carries the day.
So when you say intellect, that's obviously in terms of, if you know that lunch hour, the lunch time is 12:30, but it's 12 o'clock and you're hungry already, but you know that you have to wait till 12:30, that's your intellect telling you that you just somehow have to buy the time, fight with the urge.
Yeah, well, you can be hungry for other reasons other than a trained hunger. So you could be hungry because you're hungry, because you haven't had food to eat. Now that is a different motive for wanting to eat. But he's saying that an additional factor that can trigger that is habit. So even when other things don't trigger it, habit could trigger it. If you have a habit to eat at a certain time, so when that time comes, then you want to eat. So it's not, in other words, it's not to the exclusion of the other motives to, the other stimulants to want to eat. Okay. Now, this next thing, is really, really very, 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 very fundamental, very important. We'll start again from these words, ukashapogim. So it's the 1, 2, 3, 4. It's in the middle of the fourth full line from the bottom. So he says this again. Ukashapogim ba shtei ruchos hafuchos, when two contradictory forces meet with this nefesh bahamas, azai hi nichnas. Then it's humbled before the stronger one at that hour, at that moment. Like it goes to the stronger one. Now, Lufi, because, now this is the because that is really, really very, very fundamental. Lufi shehi mechuseres bino lihios roa es hanolad. Because the Nefesh HaBahamas lacks understanding to see the Nolad, that which will eventually transpire. Umechuseres Eitzo Gvura, and it lacks wisdom and strength. Litchos Afilu Hanoa Kol Shehi Al Achshav, even a little bit of pleasure now, Vipnei Tzar Ohano'o kayemes l'osir, because of pain or everlasting pleasure, or enduring pleasure, I don't know if everlasting is the right word, in the future. Now, what this is saying, and this is a very basic idea of understanding ourselves, that the nature of lust is that it's entirely nearsighted. All it wants is what it sees in front of it at the time. It doesn't see the future. So, for example, let's say if you have, a very good way of explaining this is, think of an alcoholic. So an alcoholic, God forbid, is the is just an extreme manifestation of someone with the lust to drink. That person, that alcoholic, is being ruled by his Nefesh HaBahamas in terms of his the Nefesh HaBahamas' desire for this particular pleasure, namely drinking. You go to an alcoholic and you say, listen here. Because of your drinking, you lost your friends. You lost your connection with your family. You lost your good marriage. You have to show up at a meeting tomorrow, and if you're drunk and you don't show up, or if you show up drunk, you're going to lose your job. And you know something? If you lose your job, you're going to lose your income. And if you lose your income, you're not going to be able to buy booze. So in the interests of drinking, you're better off not drinking right now, because this one drink is going to cost you a lot of drinks in the future. So what will the alcoholic do? You know what the alcoholic will do? He'll have the drink now. Because the mentality, or mentality is even the wrong word, because there's no mentality, but the nature of the Nefesh HaBahamas is, it's like an animal. An animal wants to eat now. You go tell an animal, well, you know, if you go on a diet, you know, you'll be a more beautiful animal, and, you know, the girls will like you. I don't know what you tell the animal. But the animal only sees what's in its nearsighted, what's in front of it at that second. People cannot, the Nefesh HaBahamas that we have cannot calculate future gains or losses. It can only endeavor to have immediate satisfaction. So that's why the only consideration when two forces collide for the same Nefesh HaBahamas The only consideration is which is stronger. Which is stronger now? Nothing else. But again, that's a very, very, very important insight, because when we have Nefesh HaBehamis issues, we have to realize that it may seem like an idea that's being formed in your head about why this or that should be done, but it's just lust for immediate, that wants immediate fulfillment and nothing else. Okay? Now, then he goes on to say, Ukamat, now this is the last paragraph. He says, Ukamat, it is almost so, She'ein lohem lebale hachayim yisron al hatzmochim, that bale chayim, animals, have almost no advantage over things which grow, like inanimate things, meaning a cow is no better than no better than a tree. Vadomimim, and things that are completely inanimate, like stones. There is almost no difference between a cow and a tree and a stone. Me'achar she'ein bahem koach, since they do not have the ability, lanuach, to stop, lanuach, or to move, or lahashos, or to wait, to nuas on their movements, b'kol shehu at all. V'nefesh ha-bahamis shalahem nidchis tekef k'kona v'suf. Their nefesh ha-bahamis is immediately pushed like the reeds in the rushes. That the nefesh ha-bahamis of an animal it's almost like a tree. It's almost like a stone. It has no, there's blood in it, but there's a heartbeat. There's a spinal cord, at least with some animals. But in terms of its function, vis-a-vis, like choosing what to do, not much different. Then he says, furthermore, ulufisha'ein lo nefesh ha-bahamis mitzido shum ratzon shel b'chira, and since the nefesh ha-bahamis has no desire of choice, al kein lo shayach bo tzivui v'azhara shel aseh v'lo saseh klal. There's no such thing as a commandment, a positive commandment, a negative commandment. The nefesh ha-bahamis that's in us is like an animal. There's no good, wrong, right, wrong. There's no mitzvahs. There's no, none of the precepts of the Torah. Now he goes on. Who? Achein, however, ha'adam, man, shu baldas v'arma u'moshel berucho, a man who has das, has wisdom, arma, and he has cleverness. U'moshel berucho, and he rules over his own spirit. Yachol lohania nefesh ha-bahamis l'tovas atzmo kiritzono. He can move. Lohania means to move. He can move the nefesh ha-bahamis for his own purpose as he desires. Tahainu, that is, l'orer b'kirbo ruach shel taiva v'tzar mamish. The person can instill within his nefesh ha-bahamis a spirit of desire or pain. Kagon, for example, lahavriach hatziporim min hakomo al yedei kishkush hazug, like chasing birds away from produce through a bell. Clanging a bell or something, the birds run away. So the birds have only nefesh ha-bahamis, but to them, the clanging of a bell is a negative thing. It scares them, it does something to them. When they hear that, then they run. Olufatosam, or you can lure them, bivsar taiva, with meat, that they lust for, lovo hilochet bapach. They can come and get caught in a snare, in a trap. Olaholad bataivos fahargoshos mulumados al yedei hergel. Another thing you can do is you can train them to have pleasures from certain things through training them. Kaniskar Leil, as we mentioned above, like training them to have pleasures, you know, maybe, you know, you train the dog that if they, you know, they go fetch something, you give the dog a pat on the head, and the dog feels good about that. So then after a while, the dog will fetch things, but you have to give him a pat on his head. So the dog operates for the pat on the head. So that's a trained pleasure. Umishu baki umumche b'mlechas achinuch, he, person who's knowledgeable and knows the work of training, yochol ishtamesh b'chol minei kochos balei achayim, he can use all kinds of all sorts of things with animals. Ka'adam ha'osa b'shalo, as a person is doing something for himself. I think the English translation says it means he can do it for his own purposes. Like you can train an animal to do things for yourself. Derech Mashal, for example. Like, what's an example of this? Min ha'ofos, you think of birds, shechus shara'os shalachem chad mo, that they can see very, 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 very well. Like hawks. Lamdin also, tzidas chayos v'ofos v'dogim. You can train them to capture little animals and other birds or fish. Koach hashor lachrisha. You can train the ox to plow. Chamor lamasoi, a donkey for burden. Umrutzas hasus lavodas odom, the running of a horse for working for man. Vafilu hapil hagodol, and even a great elephant. Shekol gufo shelodem einar ela kiyitush negdo, that the whole body of the person is only like a mosquito next to it, compared to an elephant. Batzayodim marimim lohem lulochton lumeos wawafim, and nevertheless, the hunters can trap them by the hundreds and by the thousands. Hashem Yisparach, and the Almighty, Asher Hishlit Es Adum Mishtamesh Bruchos Vavir, that person gave man the ability to rule over the wind of in the air, Lizros Paul and Esagronos, to winnow grain, Asiya Esarechayim, to turn a mill, I guess with a windmill, Limshoch Sfinos Tunos, and to pull loaded ships, Mikotze Ha'aretz, from the end of the earth, Utoaloso Hanoso, that taught him to do all these things, meaning that Hashem, that gave man the ability to use inanimate forces, such as wind, for his own benefit. They also gave man the ability to rule the Nefesh HaBahamas. And through that, he can train him to control this. I'm not sure what the word toafas means. But he can control the elephant, ululamdo lekabel morus mivalav, and he can teach the animal to take direction from its owner, the tzafos levuso, to hope for its harness, ulovdo b'chol kocho, and to serve him with all of its strength, achilagabe ha'odom, until compared to man, kamat yet ein yisrael lenefesh achayo al adomim. It gets to the point that the elephant has no more resistance to the master's command than the plants do. You know, you can just totally control it.
Rabbi?
Huh?
Isn't it particular that in Genesis that God says that man is to be master over all the animals?
Yes.
And
I think so.
And it's weird to think that, like, if God gave us this power to be able to rule over animals,
yeah,
like the way you're describing here, like the horse and the donkey and the ox and all those animals, that it was meant to be that way, that we could rule over our nefesh, our animal spirit, our nefesh, our animal soul spirit, because it wasn't like we were on a par with them, you know, like man was designed to do that, to make mastery over it.
Over horses.
Well, no, I mean the analogy is that if God, like you said, if God gave us power, the mastery to rule over, like say the animals, but you also said the inanimate forces of the world. But if you think that in Bereshit it says that man was created like to master all the creation, you know. So it's meant to be that we should do this, you know.
So,
I mean, it's a parallel.
Yeah, but I mean, it may be that it's meant to be, but he's analyzing what's going on. He's saying, how does a man get to? Let's say in Bereshit it says that man rules over, let's say, the horses. For arguments,
right.
Let's take that for an example. If you just read Bereshit, so you know someone was just born and they just started to read Bereshit, they might say that it means that there's a company and all the horses listen to all the men, not to all the people, all to the men and the humans. So he's saying it's not like that. That's not what happens. But what happens is that. An animal is controlled only by a nefesh ha-bahamas, and that nefesh ha-bahamas, one cleverly when understood and then cleverly trained by a human with human intellect, the nefesh ha-bahamas can be reduced in its to the point where it would have absolute compliance, and it becomes a total slave to the desires of its owner.
Right.
Now what he's going to say, what he's saying is, he is using this as a metaphor to explain how a person can ascend to control the animalistic parts within them. That the animalistic parts within us also don't think, also are, you know, can be very strong in, you know, when they do, you know, rear up their head and try to fulfill their desires, as the example of the elephant which he gives. The elephant, it could get up there and crush its owner. But if you go ahead and you deal with it in a clever way, then you can reduce the elephant's function to the point where it becomes a total servant of your desires and your will and your well-being.
Right, but what I'm trying to say is that this is how it was designed to be.
Yeah, it was designed to be, but you have to understand what was designed. He's explaining what was designed.
Right.
He's explaining how it is. You know, what are the components of it? Because you see, when people, let's say, it's, you know, it's a Seres Yimei Tshuva now, so people make, let's say, a New Year's resolution. So I resolve to do this. But the problem with these kinds of things is that they usually don't work because we don't understand the breakdown of what's in us and which things have to be attacked how, and how you can go about making a change. And the whole thrust of this book is to break down the different components of of people and to try to show how you can actually get to something and control your spirit just like we can control a big fat elephant. That's what the book is about. But he said, this is his foreword, or, you know, the translator says his introduction, he's showing in the foreword what people can do with an animal. The direction that it's going is what people can do with themselves. But that serves as as an example of what can be done and how it has to be done and how it should be done. And the end of this introduction, he's going to, you know, just talk a little bit more about what to do and what not to do. So let's try to finish that up before we say good evening. So we're at the top of page 32. Let's try to finish this page. So hine habolum hapichim, so the smart owners, chosim mil hatriach bioser al behemtom. They are careful, they're compassionate, or they're considerate about not overburdening their animals. Umafsikim lohem kol machsoram b'ayin yofa. And they generously take care of all their needs. V'chdei la'ametzes kocham la'avodasam. So as to strengthen their strength, like to fortify their strength for their service, like, you know, you want to keep a well-fed assistant. While koldvar pesha, but then on everything that's wrong, choften osam b'maklos taketh. They hit them with sticks or with whips right away. Shlo tachzor l'sura sheinis od. So it shouldn't go back to do this a second time. Marvichin mishnei tzadim, and then they profit from two ways. I guess they profit in that it's being taken care of, being given consideration, and by punishing it immediately, it doesn't go bad. It doesn't rebel. So he keeps it happy. And he prevents it from going off. That's what a smart owner does. Hibuchatvarim bashotim, and the opposite is with fools. Machbidin al ulam aleihem, they give them too much work. Umakamtsin lahem es lechem chukam, but then there's miserly about giving them what they need. Val yedekach. And through this, they shorten the lives of their animals, and they deprive themselves from their work. Or else they could cause the elephant to rebel against them. The physical strength of an elephant is way more than the owner. He'll rise up against the owner to crush him with his feet. To crush his organs. Then they're forced to somehow go against the person with kardumos or axes. Ula yatzlichu lekapeach es kardumo lamiso, and somehow will do something to its nose and kill it. Al kolponim lasoso mechuser ever, or to cause it to be wounded or crippled. Ula abe chatzi shoviov, and to lose half of its value. Veshotim acherim, and other fools, mafligin lidach gisa, they go off to the other side. Like they sort of they pander to their animal with little work, umazonos mufcharos, and very choice food. Mashpilin atzma lischokimor, they lower themselves to play with the animal, like they go they step off the pedestal of being a master. They play with it. They teach the animal to be ungrateful for what's being given to it. For so far, lishtabed bibaleha linham kresa. And the end is the animal will use the master to fill its stomach. V'derech klal, and generally speaking, osan hachafetzim, those who desire lishtaker b'kochos balei chayim to lishtaker means to benefit from the strengths of living animals. Srichen lios bekiyin b'mleches achinuch shalohem. They have to be knowledgeable in the ways of training them. V'umanim nimratzim, and they have to be experts, real experts, v'hamtzi b'chorega, to come up at every moment, mine armumios shonos gefihu inyan, different types of clever things as needed. But you have to know exactly what to do at each time. Umagam tzrichim shkei derabo, and it needs a lot of diligence. V'savlonos rutzufa, and patience. Yomim b'shonim, of days and years. Lovo b'machteres deos, osan ha-balachayim, to come like with machteres, and like new kinds of ideas. He called, the English says it subterfuges. I don't know, subterfuges. Machteres is like a tunnel, and Deos, Machteres Deos, the tunnel of ideas, he calls subterfuges. It might be a good way of translating. It is a good way of translating. Osana Balechayim, Hamischanchenato al Yodeim, that are trained now through them. The term Shiatzlichu Lahachnis Chachmasam. They have to do this before they will be successful at bringing their wisdom, benafsham habahamis, and their animalistic soul, ulharich mimshaltam alem kiritzonam, and that to cause their rule over them to last a long time as they desire. So that's what you have to do to train an animal properly. So he has already made, you know, an allusion to the human nefesh habahamis. And this is the prototype, the paradigm of what needs to be done. So if a person has a bad habit, to just blindly say, I'm going to change, it's very hard, because essentially you're just butting heads with the Nefesh HaBahamas, which doesn't really work. It's like if you have you have a cow sitting there, and you go over to the cow and you put a yoke on it and says, okay, now pull the plow. The cow's not interested. You probably have to kill him before he's going to do that. But if you go ahead and do it with steps, and you do it with chokmah, and you do it with a plan, and you do it with with all kinds of subtleties, then you can get somewhere. So that is the I guess the introduction of the book to how a person has to be very cunning in the science of how to change oneself. Remember Nancy, I think it was Nancy Reagan, had this symbol, the saying about drug addiction, just say no. And she was the brains behind that idea. just say no. So like if you're hooked on drugs, you can't just say no, because you have a Nefesh HaBahamas that wants drugs, and that Nefesh HaBahamas is very intractable. To get it trained, it's a whole science. So they do it with these 12-step programs. They do it this way, they do it with, but you can't just say no. That's just not, it doesn't work. It applies as well to many other things.
So, Rabbi, the whole point of this introduction, if I understand it correctly, is to say that you don't just lead the animal around like blindly. You know, you just have it respond to you like almost like mechanically. Like, what you're doing is actually you're instilling some sort of wisdom, some sort of spirit of compliance into this animal by ruling over it with wisdom and cleverness.
Yeah,
and you're kind of training it to respond to you in certain ways. You're not just blindly leading this thing around and...
Well, you're not directing it suddenly to do what you would ultimately like it to do.
Right, you're not whipping it to do something. Like
you can't walk over to it and say, I want you to do this.
Right.
You train the dog. You say, see, this guy's dog sits. You say, sit, the dog sits. So you get a dog, you go to the dog store and you buy a dog. You tell the dog to sit, he doesn't sit. So you take a baseball bat and you tell the dog, if you don't sit, I'm going to crack you on the head. He still won't sit, you know? You have to train it, you know, step by step.
Right.
And then it'll sit. So people also, with those, some, there are parts of our personality that also won't respond to this kind of message. The thing that's trickier is that it's all rolled up in the same person. So let's say my mind is training that dog. So when I'm training that dog, I understand that I have to tell the dog to sit in stages before it will respond to the order, and then it will respond. But if my mind is training my own nefesh bahamas, so the tendency of those who haven't had the good fortune to study cheshbon nefesh is to just go to yourself and say, okay, from now on I'm going to go to shul on time. But I like to stay in bit. From now on, I'm going to go. But that just doesn't work. That doesn't work. I remember, we could have this, close with this vignette. The yeshiva that I attended did something years ago that was very unusual. The whole group went to Israel, the rabbis and the students, for a year. And they did it on three different occasions. So, it wasn't in those days it was a small yeshiva. And when they were here in America, so it was like a local yeshiva, it was minyan, so the boys were in the minyan, there were lay people in the minyan. So there was always a fairly sizable minyan. They got to Israel, they were a transplanted group, not everybody went along. And they went onto an Israeli schedule. So let's say if we had minyan in Queens at 7:45 in those days, or at 7:30. So in Israel, it was a little bit of an earlier start. It was at 7. All of a sudden, minyan became a little bit shaky. So there was discussions about how to get the minyan more substantial. So someone said, let's make the minyan at 8 o'clock in Israel, then everybody will come on time. So the rabbi said that people have a minyan personality. He said there's some people that come 5 minutes early, some people come 10 minutes early, some people come on time, some people come 5 minutes late, some people come 10 minutes late, some people come a half an hour late. He said if you have the minyan at 7, or if you have it at 8, or if you have it at 9, that something about the personality and the relationship to coming on time to that minyan will always be the same. The same guys that were 10 minutes late when it was 7:45 are 10 minutes late when it was 7. That's the way people are. He was talking about the changeover from the United States to Israel. I'm saying that this can go on for 50 years. You have a fellow that comes 10 minutes late to shul, or 10 minutes early. If the man is around, and 50 years later, he's still coming 10 minutes early or 10 minutes late. because there's something about his, you know, his Nefesh HaBahamas and its relationship to sleep and arousing itself to the call to be someplace at a certain time, that unless it's dealt with cleverly, it's going to stay the same. Because you can't do anything about it. You can. You'll say, all right, I'm going to come. So you force yourself to come at on time. But it's usually what happens, 90% most of the time, is that very short time after that, you guy goes back to the same pattern. But he's saying that the cleverness that we know about when my mind trains that dog has to be applied when my mind trains my own Nefesh HaBahamas.
But it is possible to do.
Yeah. That's what the book is about. But it doesn't happen automatically. It doesn't happen so fast. Okay?
I think that the say no to drugs thing also made the first-time users, you know,
that's true. Before they, actually
before they
get
addicted, you know, I think that they may have been thinking about that too.
Sorry.
That was a great class, Rabbi. Thank you.
Yeah.
This thing works.
So no class section over here. We're off for the next week, Rabbi.
Yeah.
And the week out, two weeks.
Yes. Thanks for coming.
Okay. Well, Gemar Hashem
Tov. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
Sure.
Let's do it now.
Oh.
Do what?
Do that.
Okay, everybody. See you in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
Bye bye.
We will.
Thank you, Rabbi. What do you mean? For minion?
No.
For what?
Okay, so you want to stay a second? Don't just be part of the meal on this.
I can't get this thing to stop. Do you have these things on? See, it was at the bottom, it's like 1 hour and 7 minutes. It seems to keep going. It used to be you shut the
door. It's still recording.
Hmm?
It's still recording.